Ladies and gentlemen, in the blue corner, standing at a sleek 5'11", 245 pounds, the tumultuous tempest of technique, Thomas Lilly. And in the red corner, at a curvaceous 5'11", 315 pounds, the jovial juggernaut of judgment, John Cheryl Sheridan. A meeting of the masters of mastication. Turn your attention as they delve deep into all things lifting and more. This is Peak Speak.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back with another episode of Peak Speak. After the massive controversy of last week not being released.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, dear. What a disaster. It wasn't really a disaster.
It wasn't a disaster. It was averting a potential disaster, I think is probably a better way to describe it.
Yeah, I honestly thought I made it pretty clear why we decided not to release it in my little Instagram story, but a few people still got confused. A lot of people actually thought that we got sued. Which isn't quite the case. It was more just like, well, we know how frivolous and how trigger-happy this particular individual is with defamation lawsuits. And even though what we were doing probably wouldn't be classed as defamation, and since then I've learned that the way that it would work is that we would release it and then he would have to...
Get a cease and desist letter.
Yeah, he or she would have to get a cease and desist, and then if we refuse to cease and desist, then it goes to a defamation case. Plus, anyway, the point is we decided not to release that, and I think that was a wise choice in the end.
I find it's like writing an angry email sometimes, right? Write it, and then sit on it for 24 hours, and then come back and read it again, and then delete it.
Yeah, my logic was kind of like, the people need to hear this, but in hindsight, I think it is relevant information to get out there eventually, but I don't know if it's necessary to come from me or from us. And
does that mean we're going to start? Yeah, you're going to start leaking information, Julian Assange style, to powerlifting meme accounts.
Yeah, look, I have been known to associate with meme accounts in the past. I do not own any meme accounts, contrary to,
sure
to,
you don't,
to popular sure you belief.
Don't. Yeah, exactly.
No, look, if you go through Frustrated Strength Coach, there are several memes that have horrendous spelling errors, which I would jump off a bridge before I allowed myself to post. So it's definitely not me. I think one of the most relevant and exciting meme pages on the internet right now is Yenar Powerlifting. So shout out to our good friend, Tommy. I say good friend, neither of us have met him, and I think I'll get to meet him at National. So see you there, Tommy. Anyway, what are we talking about today?
Well, this is another topic suggestion from our good friend, Mr. Matt Stenzel, about... What did he say? Five principles or bang for your buck principles for people who don't have a coach?
Yeah.
So, you know, what are the important things you should know if you're not going to invest in coaching services?
Your number one was get a coach.
My ironic, amusing one was get a coach. And then three and four referred back to the idea of getting a coach.
Do you think we'd have a lot more or a lot less viewers if we leaked the Peak Speak group chat between you, me, and Sam?
I think we would get a lot more people. Like, I think the...
Sam is a straight fucking savage, man.
If you think the saltiness level of the podcast is high, you should see the group chat. I don't think it's in any of our best interests in the vein of avoiding defamation lawsuits. I feel like it's probably not worth releasing that.
Sorry,
but I think like any good group chat, it should stay private. That's the beauty of a good group chat.
Exactly.
I think we ended up going with what, 3 each, because 6 is a nicer number than 5 when there's 2 of us.
Yeah.
And I don't know yours completely, but you sort of mentioned yours take a slightly more
sterile is the word.
Sterile is the word. I was going to say practical. Yeah. I thought about this for a little while and kind of slept on it last night. I think for me, and it sort of speaks to how I think about coaching and training and stuff like that, I tend to lean further and further towards the slightly more esoteric concepts and exploring it yourself than I do telling you exactly what to do all the time. And in that vein, my first one was just to be open-minded. I think a lot of people... especially in powerlifting, because there are so many people who create these cult-like figures. Cough, Thomas Lilly, cough. and they become... And it's not them necessarily, but it's their followers become really almost fanatical in some ways about following their approach to training and their system and their methods. And I think it's really easy to do that. Because we've talked about this before, it's the idea of external authority where you're essentially giving someone else the power to make the decisions for you. And I think it's an easy thing to do, and then you just essentially religiously follow your interpretation of their system, and then when you inevitably fail, it's their fault, not yours. But I think to be really successful coaching yourself in the long term, you do need to be open-minded and be able to question your own bias. And I think just sort of think critically in that respect. I mean, it's an experiment, and so that's not to say you shouldn't try things, and you shouldn't maybe try things that you kind of know are dumb so that you can learn what is dumb. Because I think we've talked about this before, the idea that like what you're paying for when you pay for a coach like one of us is a decade or so of mistakes and results and lessons, and you're just speeding that process up. So I think to do that, you need to try some dumb things, and you need to maybe go a little bit towards 11 in order to find out where 10 is. And part of that, I think, is being open-minded.
Yeah, man, that's a really interesting point, that idea of being like fanatical and so... attached to a particular method or something like that. The more that I'm doing this coach development system thing, the more I'm paying attention to other coaches' methodologies, the more I'm seeing that most people don't actually have a complete system. Most people have big holes in their system that don't add up and a lot of contradictory points. And it's like, if you're buying into a methodology and preaching it so hard, and it's not even your methodology, so you don't fully understand it, what if the person on the other end doesn't understand it as well? You can really dig yourself into a hole where you're kind of practicing dribble, you know? So I really like that one. I guess the things that we've kind of pointed out are the things that we're trying to actively instill in our lifters. So it's going to be a good blend of like our different approaches as well.
Yeah, and look, to be honest, in the last several years, I've become a lot more open-minded about how I think about coaching. And I'm much more willing to listen to people that, say, 5 years ago, I would have just written off as not understanding what they're talking about. Because it's, for me, it's about questioning the opinions that I have of myself and the theories that I use and the processes that I follow. Processes. Why do I keep fucking doing that?
I don't know.
It's been a thing in the last week or so. I don't know.
Have you also learned the word esoteric in the last like 2 days or something? Because you've used it about 3 times this morning already.
It's a good word, though.
It is. I like it.
Yeah, I think I've become a lot more open-minded and a lot more willing to engage in theories that I think my initial reaction to is I don't necessarily agree with that. And the more the less I've become attached to a lot of things, I'm much more willing to be flexible in my approach because I know that, excuse me, everyone's different. Ultimately, and that's what this is about, right? If you're coaching yourself, you're essentially committing to a lifelong experiment. And to do any sort of science experiment of any level well, you need to be relatively open-minded and willing to question your assumptions.
Absolutely.
So that you can learn something.
Absolutely. And I think that that kind of ties in nicely into my number one, which is going to be understanding the principles behind programming. You know, you think about... there's a lot of intangible stuff that's going to be really important for you if you're going down this lifting journey by yourself. But one of the more tangible things is the fact that you're going to be doing some sort of programming, regardless of whether you've got it written down or not. You're going to be following some sort of structure in your head, and having a really good handle on what principles should apply and how you should structure that is going to be really important, right? And, you know, if you're looking at different methodologies, one of the ways you're going to be open-minded and one of the ways you're going to be critical and being able to, you know, listen to some other sort of method and be able to say, well, that doesn't quite align with what I believe to be the correct principles, is by understanding those principles themselves. Mm-hmm. So if you're doing this yourself, do yourself a favor, go out, go to Juggernaut, buy the Scientific Principles of Strength Training, read it, understand it, read it again, understand it again, and then start following that kind of paradigm. Understand the phasic structure programming should kind of take. Understand how to plan your programming in the long term, not just looking at something that's 10, 12, 8 weeks ahead of you. Understand mapping out programming over a year. That's going to save you a lot of stress and strife down the track. That's going to ensure your progress. That's going to keep you a little bit more healthy. That would be my number one.
And that sort of understanding also extends beyond the world of just powerlifting. Like, if you're training for anything, you should understand those principles.
Mm-hmm.
Chad's got a really good video series on the Juggernaut YouTube. I think it's called Sport Performance Pillars.
Mm-hmm.
That takes the framework that he uses for scientific principles and applies it to, or not applies it, but shows a similar approach to performing in power sports and stuff like that. So track mm-hmm. and field and field sports and stuff. I think the other thing that understanding those principles will do is allow you to develop your own philosophy, your own style over time. Because that's, if you're going to coach yourself, that's really what you're going to do, is become an expert at coaching you.
Yeah,
which doesn't necessarily make you a good coach for anyone else, but can be applied across the bridge. But it helps you develop those philosophies, because then you can test your assumptions based on those principles. You can try a different method that you think kind of fits, but maybe tweak some things. And yeah, I think that's a really important one to start with.
All right, number two.
My number two was to take your time. I think it gets shouted from the rooftops a lot in coaching circles, people talking about longevity but not necessarily actually understanding that longevity is not even like where you're going to be in a year. Longevity is like where you're going to be 25 years from now. And just having an approach that allows you to know when to put the foot on the gas and push for pure performance, and when to maybe back off and pursue other areas of training that revolve around being a little bit more healthy and functioning better as a human, so that your 5-year powerlifting career, which is for most people a fucking long powerlifting career, doesn't completely ruin you physically.
Mm.
I think it's a sport that's very easy to get really super caught up in, and then 5 years from now, you'll be spat out the other end of it, broken and sorry and feeling a bit shit for yourself. And if you are willing to take the time and do it well, I think you can make a lot of progress in the long run.
It's funny because it's kind of become a little bit flavor of the month to talk about longevity.
Yeah.
And you'll watch the same person preach it on Instagram and then 5 seconds later doing an unsolicited max for the gram. You know what I mean? It's become one of these things that people love to talk about, but putting it into practice when you're a certified bro is a little bit harder. So
exactly, man. And like, we've all done it. We're all meatheads at heart whose egos get in the way occasionally. And look, to be honest, I think that's part of the idea, is that you should have a bit of fun here and there. And the way you learn how to do any of this stuff, like I said before, is to take things to 11, because that's how you find out where 10 is. So maybe you've got to learn that lesson, and that's part of preaching longevity, is you can say it a lot to people, but no one actually listens. Because if you'd gone back and told 15-year-old John to be, you know, maybe a bit smarter about what you do in the gym and don't do your max effort drop sets on the bench press machine that the gym has, I probably wouldn't have listened to you. And I then wouldn't be the person that I am today because of that, you know?
Yeah.
So
it's funny.
It's one of those contradictions that everyone preaches it, but if you, I'm sure if we told 15-year-old Thomas where he'd be in 15 years, he would be like, nah, man, I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. It's fine.
I got a, Instagram does memories now, and I got a memory from 2 years ago. I would have just done Pro Roar in the March, and I'd gotten into a pretty intense volume phase. And it was May the 5th yesterday, so Cinco de Mayo, which meant Guzman had $5 burritos. And now it was a Friday, and it was like, okay, well, burrito day and deadlifts. So we all did deadlifts, and a few of us did some unsolicited singles. And I pulled a 300, and my back let go, and I couldn't walk for like 3 days, and I was pretty fucked. And that was, yeah, a really good reminder. Don't be a fucking idiot.
Yep.
And it's funny, like the deadlift was easy as, and I was strong enough for it. It's just, it wasn't the time to do it, you know?
Yep.
I was pretty fatigued from all the volume. It was just my body's way of saying, man, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, yeah. Make a better decision.
Yeah. Yeah. My number two, I want to say understand technique, but the reality is finding reliable, good information on the principles of technique is pretty much next to non-existent. Like if you go looking for it, you're going to get so much conflicting information out there.
Yeah.
So more broadly, oh, sorry, more specifically, if there's one technical aspect that's going to have a carryover through a lot of your training, it's going to be bracing. And it's funny because bracing has been, I think, so poorly understood and therefore so poorly taught. And because of that, there's a lot of weird stuff around bracing. Whereas bracing is a simple physiological process that we all have, right? So I'll take you through the technicality of it real quick because that's
give us your 2 minute cliff notes on bracing. Yeah, if you had two minutes to teach bracing to the world, how would you teach it?
Yeah, well, don't start the clock just yet because I want to explain something real quick.
No, the clock has started, Thomas. You've got a minute 48.
No, incorrect. Now you've lost my train of thought. And it's early, and the coffee hasn't kicked in. What I was going to say is that like a lot of the cueing that you hear around basically anything comes from a coach's visualization of what they can rationalize when they do it themselves. Yep. Like a lot of cueing is born of what a coach can feel, right?
Yes.
So people will visualize bracing and they'll be like, take a big breath, and they're like, oh, okay, I'm pushing into my belt. So they'll use a cue like push into your belt. Then they'll use a cue like, oh no, I'm kind of like pulling my rib cage down. So you pull your rib cage down, or you squeeze your abs, or you pull your lats down into your belt. There's a whole bunch of cues around like the visual action of what bracing looks like. And it kind of misses the mark because you can do all of that stuff on an inhale. What the brace is a Valsalva maneuver. So it's on the exhale. It's the action of forcing your air out against a blocked airway. So if you're sitting there reading this now, the way to kind of engage
reading this audio.
Yes, if you're reading the audio, sorry, listening to this, it's very early and I just got out of bed. My hair looks pretty good for just waking up, though, I will admit. If you're listening to this now, the way that you'd go through a quick bracing drill to figure out what a brace should feel like is take a big breath in, the biggest breath you can, then force it out as hard and fast as you can. Then do that again, so breathe in as big as you can, force it out as hard and fast as you can, but don't stop pushing the air out. So once you think all the air's out, just keep pushing. You'll get this horrible cramping sensation in your abs, right? That is what your brace is. So a lot of people will breathe in and then brace on that inhale when everything's geared towards being in this like extended, horrendous sort of position, which doesn't quite work for any of the three lifts. So to engage your breath, take that big breath in again, go to push it out as hard as you can, but don't let it come out. Okay, then you'll feel everything switch on the way that it should switch on when you brace. Then you can ignore all that silly cueing around like pulling rib cages down and pushing into your belt and all that. All of that will happen automatically when you engage a forced exhalation the way that I just described. If you can do that while you're lifting, which is far more challenging than what it is just sitting there and doing it, a lot of the issues that you'll get around joint things and movement things and funny technical things will disappear.
Yes.
So my number two would be get really good at bracing. Because, like otherwise you go down on like these wild goose chases of drills with fucking feet on walls and balloons and all these things that are just kind of like, it's you know how to breathe, Don't get too caught up in this idea that you don't know how to breathe. Don't get sold into the fact that you can't breathe. Of course you can fucking breathe, otherwise you'd be a vegetable slash dead.
Yep, I think that's reasonable. I like that.
Sweet. That's my number two.
So that brings us to number three. I had a few different options for this. But I think in the spirit of esoteric approaches to things, I think my number three is just to have fun. And I think some people misconstrue fun with like random training or everyday maxes or different things like that. I think the way to have fun in a sport that is inherently as monotonous as powerlifting is to spend time enjoying the process, right? The idea of a process-orientated approach versus an outcome-orientated approach.
Mm-hmm.
Where an outcome-orientated approach would be, okay, I want to squat 300, and so all I care about and all I measure my success against is, did I squat 300 or not?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of understanding that the process to squat 300 is actually a series of things that involve understanding technique, understanding programming principles, doing the work, and uh-huh. diligently doing the work repetitively over a long period of time. So
yeah.
I think for me that like fun can sometimes look boring on paper, but it's about understanding that this is a process and you're going to chip away at that process over time and build the foundations of a really massive squat or deadlift or whatever it is. So I think a lot of people talk, again, like with the longevity thing, a lot of people talk about having fun in training, and they do that by doing a lot of weird shit and things that aren't necessarily, like maybe they are fun, but they aren't necessarily conducive to an improved result over the long period. Yeah. And there's a place for dumb shit. There's a place for a little bit of a challenge here and there. But for the most part, you've got to be honest with yourself and understand the powerlifting is a really boring sport. Like to train for, you know, it's the same things over and over and over, and little tweaks and minor changes that make minor differences over a period of years and decades instead of days and weeks. And that process can still be really fun. You can still have a lot of fun doing it. You can be surrounded by a good group of people in an environment that is conducive to excelling at what you're doing. But it's inherently going to be a bit dull. And so enjoying the process will allow you to be in it for the long time. Because I think if you don't enjoy the process, because that's actually what powerlifting is. You know, competition, even if you did 3 comps a year, you're still really only on the platform actually competing for like maybe 6 minutes total. So if you don't enjoy the training process, you don't enjoy the day-to-day monotonous grindy approach to training, then powerlifting is probably not for you. I think the third esoteric principle in John's list of esoteric principles about powerlifting.
And you know, if you aren't focused on the process, if you're not learning and growing from the process and enjoying the process, you'll find it really hard to deal with failure.
Exactly.
And you have to be good at dealing with failure because that's going to be part of the process.
Such a huge part. It's how you learn, right? Failure is a much better teacher than success ever will be.
Mm.
And that's why I think in a lot of cases, the people who are good coaches have spent a lot of time failing. They've done things, they've tried different things because you learn a lot more from a failed lift than I think you ever will from a successful one.
Yeah. I think it's funny you use that 300 kilo example. I think of my journey to 300 raw, and it's like States 2014 I won, but my squat was a little bit more conservative. Then I did Nationals 2014. I tried to cut 13 kilos and I missed it, so I ended up competing in a heavier weight class and I had 300 kilos on the bar and I failed it. Then I cut 12 kilos of body weight properly and did Pro Raw in the 95s and I failed 300 there. And then I took a long break from lifting, like maybe 3 or 4 months, and then I got into Equipped and I did Nationals 2015 and smoked you, and then I finally squatted 300 in August 2015. So it was over a year from having the the 300 on the bar first to actually achieving the 300.
Yeah.
And in hindsight, it doesn't seem like a long time. Like between those comps, it didn't ever feel like a long time. Now it doesn't feel like a long time. Back then, it felt like an eternity. It felt like I'd had 300 on the bar 100 times before I finally got it.
Yeah, dude. I had the same thing with going from 400 to 410 squatting equipped. I did 400 for the first time in 2013. And between 2013 and Nationals in 2015, I think I competed like maybe 5 or 6 times and bombed a couple of times, squatted less than 400 a couple of times, and then 2 years later at Nationals, I squatted 410. It was like, you know, that represented a 2.5% increase over 2 years, but also not represented in that 2.5% is the fucking time I spent trying things that didn't work and learning what did work. And I, you know, you can look at those two squats and they're two different things. Like I learned a lot in that process and that's now a part of shaping who I am and what I've done. But I think I'm certainly better now at dealing with failure than I was then.
Yeah.
Cause you just get accustomed to it, you know, and that's, I think part of enjoying fun is understanding that, or having fun doing the process is understanding that failure is a part of it. If you're not prepared to fail in a sport like powerlifting, you're in it for the wrong reasons.
Yeah,
of course. You're not going to be successful in the long run.
Mm. What's your number three? We probably should have ended on your number three because my number three is again very sterile and robotic and very Thomas-esque.
Very Thomas, yes. That's all right. Everyone knows I'm the fun one in this podcast.
My number three would be around understanding stability and stability training. And the only reason I bring that up, the only reason I bring that up is because it's another thing that's become flavor of the month. Like it's another one.
How many Bozo balls do I need to stand on in order to squat 300?
7,000.
It's going to be pretty high.
I had an interesting discussion with someone about the Bosu ball thing the other day. Like, everyone globally laughs, that has a brain, laughs at people doing squats on a Bosu ball. But for some reason in powerlifting, it's readily accepted to hang bands and kettlebells or use a bamboo bar on bench. Like, it's exactly the fucking same thing. So stability has really become flavor of the month, and understanding A, what you're actually trying to achieve with it, B, how to perform it in a way that actually means something, and then C, how to integrate it into training so that it has relevant carryover into your actual lifting is going to be important. Otherwise, you just become another fucking jockey in the gym on all fours, flailing your legs and arms around, right? So I'll give a quick and dirty couple of points on what stability training is and should be. The first thing is understanding the reality of what stability training looks like. First, understand that stability is your ability to control a joint through range, right? So when we talk about stability training, it's teaching you how to hold your joints in particular positions that are relevant to where you lift. So for us, the hardest part to stabilize is always going to be the bottom of the squat, on the chest, on bench press, and the bottom of the deadlift, right? So when we're training stability, if we're training outside of those ranges, if you're doing, you know, taking your hip through half a range and trying to stabilize it there, you're not going to have dick carryover into your squat. That was the worst dick carryover. What the fuck is that? Anyway, you're not going to have much carryover into your squat. So understanding that you need to train the joints through the full range is going to be really important. And B, understanding what stability training actually looks and feels like, right? So how long have you been lifting, John? When did you start?
Just a year number? I was like 15, so 2000 and something, like 2002, 2003.
All right, so you've got like 16 years of learning how to rationalize progress, and the way that you rationalize that progress, again, from a sterile perspective, is going to be by resistance. Right, so if you can leg press 6 plates for 10 reps, and then the next week you can do 7 plates for 10 reps, you got stronger. Or if you can do 6 plates for 20 reps, you got stronger.
Yeah.
So you rationalize your progress by resistance. Stability is the opposite. You rationalize progress by instability. So the resistance just provides the stimulus. So the band or whatever you're using should pretty much remain static. It doesn't actually increase that much. And as you get better at the exercise, it doesn't get easier, it gets harder because you stabilize through greater positions and you get better at selectively targeting your weaknesses. The thing people often go wrong with is that they measure progress by resistance. So they just add more band tension. Mm. They add a heavier dumbbell or whatever. And when you do that, you end up just using the strong things around it and actively yes. avoiding the things that are weak in those positions. So getting your head around what stability training actually is, how to integrate it into your training, like how to have a stepwise process of, okay, well, now I've learned to control pelvic stability and move my hips. Now I can put that into a leg press. Now I can put that into a Romanian deadlift or a good morning. Now I can put that into my squat or my poor squat. You know, you can build it up. Otherwise, again, you just become that guy on the floor on your back flailing around and never get any better at anything.
I think that's a solid bunch of very sterile principles that I think I think we do a good job of balancing slightly more esoteric things with some actual real information that you can maybe get a benefit from.
Sam, can you please put a counter on the corner of the podcast for every time John says esoteric?
I'm 100% behind that. I'm all about that. Did I ever tell you about the time? I think you might have been there. Maybe you weren't. I think it was like one of the first pro raws that Chad came to. And he said he was doing a seminar at PTC South Melbourne. And he said something. It was like, fuck, okay. It was something that he said like at the end of every sentence.
Yeah, I was there because we got beers afterwards.
Yeah, that's right. And I don't remember what the phrase was. But anyway, it was some like throwaway bit that he put at the end of every sentence, and he made some reference to counting it at the start of it, and I actually counted it through the whole seminar, and it was like he said it like 78 times or something like that in 2 hours. It was
good. I think one important thing to highlight, even though mine were very technical and sterile and yours were very esoteric, is that
we need to clarify the rules of the counter.
Like I do strongly implement all the things that you've touched on into my approach and my philosophy as well.
As do I the things you said, you know. It's, I think, while we've both come at this from a slightly different angle, we've done quite a good job of encompassing some important lessons that I think, regardless of whether you have a coach or not, are important to understand. I don't think they're exclusively for people who don't have a coach, and anyone who has a coach should just completely ignore everything we've said for the last 40 minutes or so, and just do exactly what their coach says. I think part of it is understanding these so that you can then learn from the coach that you've got.
Mm, absolutely. All right, we're done.
That was short and fast. I like that. That's how I like sex.
At TomBro7 on Instagram. Find me, like me, follow me, send me a DM. Tag me in your posts.
At JustChero, also on Instagram. And you can follow my gym at Burly Strength and Thomas's gym at Zero Weakness. And you should probably share this podcast with your mum.
Perfect. Done. Sam, do the blowy up thing.